This is the AdNonTech Podcast, conversations about education, technology, and culture, with Dr. Doug Reed and Dr. Matt Stranick. Thank you for joining us. Hello, everybody. It's Matt Stranick with you, as ever, for the latest in our series of AdNonTech conversations. Although I will confess I was sort of on the fence just a bit in terms of whether this particular conversation was going to be better situated for this particular show or whether I was going to go into the punk and alternative show, Today New Brunswick, Tomorrow the World. Ultimately, just due to, you know, what I was able to ascertain about our new latest guest, Dr. Laura Lee Flanagan, right? That's the preferred title. Please correct me if I have any aspect of that wrong, including pronunciation. Laura is Dr. Our new excellent colleague is just here with speaking to a brand new book. Laura is just an absolutely creative person across various fields of endeavor, including the visual arts, including writing, including academic work in English, including work as a lawyer and entrepreneur, and in terms of musical representation as well. So couldn't be more honored, couldn't be more thrilled to have Laura joining us from New York City is where she is and where she lives. And in terms of everything, Laura, how's it going? And for folks who might just be checking out your various, endeavors for the first time, who is Laura and what's Laura all about, if I can put it that way?
Sheesh. If people are checking it out, they should probably report back what they think, because it's a difficult question. I have lots of irons in the fire. I always have. And definitely creativity is at the core. But I do believe that I can, in my own life and path, answer that incredible question that everyone has asked. What do you do with an English PhD?
I would like to know myself.
I know. Everybody wants to know.
I got my thing in, my original, like, undergrad thing before I kind of got into being a teacher was just English major. I didn't even do honors. I'm like, huh, what am I going to do now? I kind of had to improvise a bit. What I gather with you, just, again, from sort of what's available on professional websites and LinkedIn and this and that, you started out, you did study English in your first case, right? And then you moved into the English PhD.
I did. In college, I had a BA in English literature, and then I went on to do a PhD in English literature as well. And I was very excited about the education, but that's exactly why I did it. But it was a very professionalizing program. And so they really, publish or perish, they really wanted you out there, becoming a professor. And right. I was like, oh, I don't know if this is for me. I didn't love teaching. I liked the research. I liked doing the work. I liked the philosophy. And basically, long story short, I think I was the only person working with my dissertation director that finished the dissertation and was ready to go to MLA and go on the job market. And I was like, Cliff, can I have a recommendation for law school? He was like, no, but alas, I went to law school thinking that might be an alternative intellectual career. And boy, was I fooled.
Well, it's kind of interesting only that you mentioned that. And I mean, just, again, apart from the fact that, you know, the Canadian experience with this stuff and the American experience is kind of different in terms of, you know, quantitatively or, you know, what it's actually like. My mom, English major, went into being a lawyer, and then she kind of stepped out of being a lawyer because, imagine, some people do find it kind of stressful to be in that line of work.
Yes.
But I got to ask, Laura, just because, like, out of all the various endeavors, you know, it's like I found your paintings, I found your business stuff, I found, obviously, Cro-Mags and Harley's significant musical presence. Folks, I just get to address the elephant in the room, if I may. you know, it's to use an expression. But Laura is married to Harley Flanagan, who is just a very significant presence in music, popular music, I'd say. Hardcore punk, if you want the specific term. New York hardcore, if you want to go into subgenre. But honestly, just a legendary figure by any stretch of how you define impact in guitar-based music, if I can sort of, not to, you know, kind of throw so much on, you know, Harley on this particular chat, but again, just to kind of speak to the fact that you, a lot of your creativity, from what I can tell from what's on the Instagrams and whatnot, kind of goes into promoting, managing Cro-Mags. And then as well, right, you've been writing, I probably... my scripted question, one of my scripted questions is, apart from what did you do your doctoral thesis about, because I couldn't find that, just curious, and sort of since the degree ended, what's it been like for you in writing? Is it kind of ongoing, or is it here and there, or how does that go for you?
That's interesting. So so my dissertation, I went into 18th century studies, okay. British 18th century studies, and it was a very multidisciplinary degree. So it was philosophy intense. So, you know, a lot of postmodernism, post-structuralism, Foucault, that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah, really good. Derrida, you know, the whole shebang. Yeah. And it was about representations of 18th century prostitutes in print. Yeah. So it was from 1720 to 1780, I looked at literature, but I also looked at court texts and Reformation Society texts and publications. It was a very multidisciplinary, interesting, project. I loved it. I had incredible, advisors, one of whom, passed away during the process, very brilliant scholar named Michael Sprinker. And I was able to, the university allowed me to have an outside reader as my inside reader. Okay. So I threw the ball out there and I was like, well, Randolph Trumbach is the most brilliant man I've ever read. It's a historian. And I was like, gotta get him. And he said, yes. So
awesome.
So after that, I guess I went into law. So I was on Law Review. I did some pieces for Law Review and for other journals at my law school. I was an editor on Law Review. And, since then, the writing that I've been focused on has been mostly creative. I wrote a few legal pieces after law school, but more recently working on, this has been very interesting and creative, and again stems quite a bit from my work with my husband, and you know, who is a very creative person, obviously.
Clearly.
And so there, a feature-length documentary film has been in the works for some years now. Yeah.
Can I just interject? Because I feel like I've seen, because I mean, I follow you, him, Cro-Mags, you know, and all of it. So I've seen like a couple of what look like screenshots, you know, shared from while primary filming was happening. It looked like,
yes.
I wondered whether that was going to be something that we will be able to experience soon, whether online or in some other way.
Yes. I, without too much revealing, because I can't, the answer is yes.
Awesome.
And yes. and it is beautiful and you will love it. But I have been working on that as a producer. So that was, it's funny. I have this way of sort of beginning some sort of new professional endeavor every 7 years or so and learning from ground up. I don't know what that is, but it just seems like, oh, here's this other thing that now I have to learn as if I'm a newbie. But it's, I guess it's kept my mind fairly flexible.
Awesome.
So that work has been very interesting, and producing that and writing different parts of that for pitches and for marketing and for, you know, different uses has been the focus.
So again, there's just so many areas of creativity to kind of, when people see like an indie film, you know, they're just seeing like the tip of the iceberg, right? And all of the effort, all of like the expense and really human capital that goes into that.
Huge.
You know, it's huge, right? So it's almost just like you kind of, you know, when the thing comes out, you kind of get to have a sigh of relief almost and kind of see what's kind of coming out in the horizon. Now, in terms of the book, you and Harley now are both published book authors because he has written a book of memoir. I would just sort of assume from a diligence standpoint, I'm like, if I have a lit PhD hanging out and someone who's edited for the Law Review and whatnot, I might be asking the significant other for some assistance, perhaps ideas, sounding board, whatever you call it, sympathetic fourth reader or whatever. I wonder, you know, in as much as he is obviously a creative person and kind of went through that experience with the memoir, whether, you know, there was any overlap in terms of creating books within the family home vis-a-vis, you know, you kind of stepping up now to, because again, it's not out yet, folks, but as per the Amazon blurb, I think Amazon is like, whatever. We're not shouting at Amazon, but we want you to read.
Yes.
And in the paragraph or whatnot, the blurb, it mentions sort of a narrative tack a bit to the book. And that just sort of makes me thinking, you know, outside of Anthony Bourdain or something like that, I'm not sure, you know, if you get too much of that in the wider cooking literature. So Harley's writing a book, you're writing a book, and then you're also moving into this huge sort of food and lifestyle kind of area, essentially, with this enterprise, and you're Italian. How does that all go together?
Whoa. Well, I did edit Harley's book. So backing up to then, and that was an incredible project to take on, but also working with him and, you know, helping to craft it in a way that it could be read by human beings, and, you know, punctuation and things like that. And so that was an amazing project. And we definitely learned that we work well together creatively,
awesome.
Which is amazing.
The
book that I wrote, it is a friend of mine who I work with said when she read the initial draft of it, it's not really a cookbook. It's a book about cooking. And I think that was a very kind read because it does have a lot of narrative. It has a lot of storytelling. I do weave Harley's vegetarian experience over the years into it. And I weave a lot of, you know, personal memoir-y kind of narrative about what food and good food means to me socially, culturally, emotionally, I guess.
Absolutely. So then speaking to that, I mean, further, again, I understand that, you know, as sort of a group, the Italian Americans, and I don't want to go all Scorsese, I don't want to go Robert De Niro, but I mean, you know, from my very sort of limited experience, you know, in urban centers across Canada and variously, I mean, that is a really legitimate thing, is it not? I mean, you've traveled in Europe. I mean, I'm not sure how often you go back there even to visit. So I guess when we're looking at sort of what kinds of things to expect in terms of what this book is about. So first of all, vegetarian, not vegan, only because this is a punk show and someone's going to go, wait a minute, you know. So I just want to differentiate that a bit. And then also, again, as you say, right, the culture, the family aspects of it, if you wanted to just extemporize a bit on what that is for you, I suppose.
Sure. So I have dual citizenship with Italy, and I have spent a long time in Italy. I lived there for a portion of my life, but I was born and raised in New York. So the Italian part of my family is Italian American, and my mother is a fantastic cook. And she's also a very gracious cook. So she wants people to enjoy the whole experience of eating. And I learned that from her. So the things that I've incorporated are recipes that I've learned over my life, a lot of which came, or many of which came from my mother, came from the family I was with in Italy. So I tried to integrate that. So there's quite a bit of Italian food in this, but I learned, and this was the vegetarian part. I was never a vegetarian when I started being with Harley, who is a vegetarian and has been forever. He's not a vegan, but he doesn't eat eggs. So I had to, because I love cooking, I find it a very creative outlet. I started to really play with stuff. And I said, you know, I wonder if I could get as comfortable with Indian spices as I am with Italian spices. Yes, which was very daunting for me. And I can say confidently now that I've made up some stuff. I've been like, oh, I think I'll use a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And that's like dreamy for me, because to be creative visually is very similar. Cooking is very similar to me to painting. So I have like this nothing. I have an idea. I kind of know what the colors are going to look like, what the texture, what the paint is going to feel like, similar to what the food is going to taste like, what the spices are going to taste like, and what that's going to look like at the end, or taste like at the end.
It's almost as if the kitchen is sort of conceptualized as a studio of sorts to try out, various.
That.
Yeah. I mean, and that's it, just.
Yeah. And in the spirit of that, this is what I would call a non-judgmental plant-based book. It's really for people who would like to try. And there is no judgment. I don't care what you eat. I just hope that you're eating, you know, whole good foods that aren't filled with chemicals and processed things you can't, pronounce. But other than that, whoever has the keys to the kitchen in the household, this is kind of like a gateway. What could I try that doesn't include meat and see what people think and how they like it?
So you have young people in your life. I think I have seen on your Instagram adults-ish in your around your home.
Yes.
I guess so. The kids, so to speak, participate? Have they taken that on? And in terms of what Harley brings to the situation. Is he on other people about vegetarianism? Like, is that kind of something that kind of goes out with the musical outreach for him? Is it just sort of him doing him, again, just speaking, because the dude's got such a huge platform, right?
Sure, of course. And so. I actually to that point, what's funny is that when we started talking and he started talking about the cookbook, and I needed to test my recipes, he put it out on his social media, and all of a sudden I had people all over the world testing my recipes because they were Cro-Mags fans. It was just great. I'm like, I got people in Germany making, you know, making Thai food with their kids, you know, and they're, and it was, so that was really kind of a cool overlap. And, you know, I'm happy to take advantage of his platform. He knows that.
Awesome.
But yeah, so kids involvement, absolutely. My mini-me is my niece, Charlotte, and she's definitely all over the cookbook and cooking, and she's with me right now during the summer, and she's sous chefs, and she's wonderful. So she's learning, she's English, she lives in England, normally. And then my stepsons, Jonah and Harley, besides, you know, eating everything that I put in front of them, which I appreciate, Jonah also is a tremendous cook, and I love when he's actually one of the only people, because I'm a little bit of a fascist in the kitchen, he's one of the only people who can come in and be like, I'm making dinner, and I'm like, Jonah's making dinner, bye. See ya. So it's really nice. And you know, Harley has been a vegetarian since he was a child. He like me, believes, you know, people are autonomous creatures and should do whatever they want. Adults don't need to be told what to do and what to eat. He advocates for, you know, eating good stuff, non-chemical, non-processed. You know, if you're going to eat meat, eat grass-fed meat. You know, you're putting it in your body. So just think about what you're putting in your body. But he always encouraged his own kids to eat well, and Jonah, the younger one, is still vegetarian. And the older junior, Harley Jr., is not, but his father's very supportive of him, just, you know, eating as best he can, which is obviously at 21 years old is not going to be ideal, but we work on it. It's a process.
No, that's absolutely fantastic. And what I'm seeing here, again, is just kind of like, you know, what we kind of advocate on the show vis-a-vis the education venture is that we're trying to kind of put more of a personal approach on academic and professional discourse on education, sure. Essentially, right? To kind of make it more accessible. And so when you talk about, lack of distinction, I suppose, between, you know, what's going on in this book and what's going on in the musical endeavor and what's going on within your home, it all just kind of, it's kind of cut from the same cloth. And I think in contemporary society, very often there's this idea, you know, that food is whatever on the, you know, frozen area of the supermarket. It comes from a factory, you know, and whatever they jack into it is FDA approved or whatever.
Right.
Because they don't want us, you know, to die from food poisoning. And then otherwise, there's not too much mindfulness that goes into it. There's not much intentionality. And I guess further to that, there's not even that much time in the kitchen, not really regarding it as a social activity, you know, with a beginning and an end and a part place, you know, that deserves its kind of respect within the course of the day. So I think in terms of kind of bucking, you know, the mainstream convention in sort of a true hardcore fashion, what you're kind of getting at here is really kicking at a bunch of kind of stale, you know, consumer patterns that we kind of just get blocked into generally. So again, I just think that everything you're saying here just kind of lands on a number of levels. Now, not all of us live in places even a fraction as big as New York City. So when you're seeking out, you know, ingredients, when you're seeking out, you know, things to prepare such that they can participate with the cookbook when it comes out, I'm assuming you kind of have this in mind for somebody in Wilmington, Delaware, or, you know, Prince Edward Island someplace. Let's imagine limited, rustic grocery facilities relative to your center of population.
Yes. So that's an amazing thing you raise. And I want to thank the excellent people at Farrell House for pointing that out to me very early on in my process. because, and you also mentioned time, which is very important as well. So two of the greatest, I believe, contributions of the editors and the publisher were, one, breaking the recipes down into time, how long it takes, because that's always an issue for everybody. And you want to know, like, if I'm going to give this much of my life to this thing, I got to know. It's got to be intentionality, right? I got to know it's going to take this long, and then I'm going to commit or not commit. But I can also do this, which tastes great. It really doesn't take much time at all. So that's one wonderful addition. The other was, you know, obviously we have the assumptions we have because of who we are, where we live, all of that good stuff. And as a New York native, I am always like, oh, everything's an option. I need this. I need lemongrass. I need this. You know, whatever I need, I'll find. And the publishers were very early saying to me, you're really going to have to think about alternatives. Because first, seasonality, people have different seasons, things grow at different times, you're not going to find all that stuff. So we went through and I added alternatives to different recipes. So if you can't find this, you can find this. If you want to substitute this with this. I also consulted with a friend of mine who is a very talented vegan chef to make things vegan, should people want to remove the cheese or the milk or whatever else is in there. All the recipes have egg substitute because Harley doesn't eat eggs. I do. So I really tried to, with the excellent prompting of the publisher, be thoughtful about where the reader is going to be and how to make it accessible to everyone who wants to engage with it.
Awesome. That is so cool. And who's the publisher again? I'm sorry, I don't have that readily, you know, in brain. Yeah.
Feral House.
Feral House. Okay, yes. Awesome. Now, I want to be respectful of your time, and we've kind of hit the early part of our, conversation here. But I definitely want to ask, I mean, I was kind of, you know, making fun a little bit of Amazon because they're a giant, wretched, soulless corporation.
Of course.
But
wretched.
That being said, I buy stuff there on the regular, so whatever. I'm contributing to Jeff Bezos' super yacht as much as anybody else. That being said, do you have like a preferred bookstore or online purveyor, or just, you know, anybody you can, I guess, you know, I sort of wonder about that aspect of the marketing, if I can ask.
Right. So this conversation is the first conversation I've had with anybody publicly about this project besides the press. Yes. So number one. So thank you. So for now, I too just have the Amazon link. Once we get closer to the publication date, Feral House will, I'm sure, give me and be putting out there in their own, you know, channels. Yep. Where it will be distributed, different bookshops. And I'm hoping that it will be available, of course, in local bookshops. It's my preferred, you know, outlet as well.
Awesome. And I guess I sort of have to wonder then, again, folks, you heard it here first, semi-random Canadian academic punk guy, you know, but seriously, that is very flattering. And Doug, who isn't here, we're both deeply respectful and appreciative of that. I guess sort of, you know, in terms of rolling out the book, Cro-Mags are touring Europe starting pretty soon. Are you going to be traveling as part of that as well? What can we anticipate in terms of when the book comes, the touring with the band, if that's happening, if you're part of that, and, you know, the wider effort kind of going into the second half of the year?
Yeah, so that's a great question, one I wish I could answer better than I can.
Okay.
So I am going to be going out in support of the book. I don't know where that will begin. I do sometimes go out with my husband. I usually try to meet them someplace I want to be, you know, like they're going to be in Paris. Okay, I'll meet you there. But otherwise, Chromags, yes, will be in Greece, actually, on next Wednesday, and then Spain, and then they do a tour of the UK, then they come back, then they go back to Europe. So it's a full summer. And there will be some other announcements very shortly about the fall, which is exciting. And, you know, as soon as I have copies, I'll send them out with Harley for sure. He'll take them out there. He'll sell them on the road.
Stand up next to the T-shirts and the Age of Coral vinyl and whatnot. Right?
Absolutely. He goes out with his book. And, you know, I'm sure he's been very supportive and I appreciate it. And I feed him every night, so he should be, right?
The man burns so many more calories I'm not saying a gentleman of his age. I'm saying a gentleman who's born older than me. And I don't know. It's like,
I don't get it.
Between the push-ups and the base and the jiu-jitsu, it's like, okay, a lot of calories to feed a, you know, somebody who's as into physically intensity in pretty much every aspect of what he does.
Yes.
Again, I'm just like, I'll take my 1,500 calories a day, thank you. And it's a different kind of deal for other people. You kind of referenced the nutritional aspects. You kind of referenced the cultural aspects. You know, before we kind of start to the Canadian sort of long on the way out now kind of deal. I mean, is there anything about this book, you know, that you didn't get to speak to yet? It's clear that you're passionate about it. It's clear that a lot of thought has been placed by you and your editors and the whole team that are involved in the production of this. You know, what else should we know about this? What else should we be looking forward to?
Well, I think you hit it on the head when you were asking about the kids and you were asking about the time allotment. And for me, I think it's a beautiful cooking and eating and feeding people I love is a beautiful part of life. And the fact that it's sustenance and we are in fact what we eat, and you know, for me is a privilege to then be able to create with that medium and feed it to people I love. So as a social endeavor, as something that I spend a lot of time in my life doing, I encourage other people to try that. And to those, speaking to your point about, well, we buy something, it's made for us, hopefully it's okay, FDA says it's fine, so I'll eat it. The whole process, and I definitely got this from my mother, and again, in Italy, it was driven home, the whole process around buying the food, cooking the food, caring for the food, and then making it into something delicious that you give and that nourishes someone you love is a beautiful part of life. And I encourage people to do that instead of like eating a bag of Cheetos on the couch.
Or, you know, even, you know, like just some, you know, from Skip the Dishes or, you know, DoorDash or whatever the equivalent is. I mean,
and there's a place for that. I order, you know, we order food, you know what I mean? There's a place for that in your life. But this is also like a really nice thing that I encourage people to get involved in.
Having food, feeding people, caring for people, mindfulness, you know, engaging with the culture, the wider culture vis-a-vis your food purchase choices, thinking about where your dollar goes, buying local if you can, preferably for freshness and also just as good economic practice. I really like a lot of these sort of themes that you've sort of drawn out that are going to be appearing in the narrative, the book about cooking as opposed to the cookbook, in case, you know, your publishers needs any help with a copyright on how to market that. Quotes from the transcript or something, because that's good. A book about cooking.
Yeah.
Laura, I am just literally so stoked and grateful that you've been here. And I know I can speak for Dr. Doug Reed, the inestimable Dr. Doug Reed. who would have been here but had other commitments. And, everything you describe sounds really awesome, to use a term, in terms of your book. From what I can tell, Cro-Mags are just going full on all cylinders.
Yes.
Just nonstop. And you just have really the next 6 months kind of wide open in front of you with various creative endeavors, including painting. We're going to be, folks, don't worry. We've only just really been talking about the book and a little bit about the music promotion. All of these things, all of these links, including to the really beautiful visuals that you've made available to the public, for sure. I looked those up and they're lit is what they are.
Thank you.
Yeah. And various professional associations as well. I'm not talking stalker stuff. I'm just talking stuff you can Google,
Of course.
So that'll all be a part of the resource that comes out, the blog post or whatever. The zine, Academics, the punk rock zine that goes with the video and the audio. It has been, a hardcore, awesome time having you here, Dr. Flanagan.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This is fun. And I hope we can talk again.
I would enjoy that immensely. Anytime, anywhere. This is what the Bing AI thinks your city looked like in the 1990s. So
it's fascinating. I particularly like the gibberish signs. I was looking at that before. It's wonderful.
If you look too close to those musicians, they probably got like 8 fingers because that's the kind of AI. Anyway.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's good. I like it.
Positively 4th Street, according to AI and some guy who
I recognize it.
Laura, Dr. Flanagan, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm going to end the recording now. It's been absolutely great. We all wish you, everybody who's involved, the greatest success with your book, with your other enterprises. And folks, be sure to check the website. Be sure to check the video. And be sure to share it because it's all available by hyperlink. Take care, everybody. Bye for now.
Thank you.